It's 7:42 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. Today we'll hear a conversation about addiction, recovery, and family.
I have lived in Appalachia almost 40 years. As our society makes the transition to clean energy, we should not forget how our coal miners provided the foundation.
That story and more coming up on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. You're listening to Recovery Stories, conversations from the heart of the nation's opioid crisis. Today we hear from Dayton, Ohio, 31-year-old Sarah Clay. In 2007, she met her husband, Justin.
We worked together at a factory. We hit it off pretty quickly. We moved in, and I was pregnant within 4 months.
Their family grew, but everything soon changed when the couple fell deep into heroin addiction. Today, Sarah's in recovery, and Justin's mom, Kathy Stewart, helps to care for her four children. Less than a year after going into recovery, Justin died of an illness.
When Justin got his cancer diagnosis, we were already using at the time. He got to a really dark place. He just kind of gave up. I remember dealing with overdoses and him asking me, next time, please don't call the squad. And that was a hard thing, you know, because I wouldn't be able to do that. When did you realize Justin and I had a problem?
The kids would report that they had not eaten or that they had to fix their own meal while parents were resting. How can you explain the overwhelming power to allow drugs to supersede the care of your children?
At first, it was almost like a pick-me-up. I remember even saying one time, I'm a good mom when I'm high, because I could go run with the kids and play with the kids. And it sounds, you know, insane to say now, because, you know, ultimately my children were abandoned. But it got to the point where my kids were just in the way. I needed drugs to live. I remember the day Children's Services came to the house and told me they were taking the kids. There was no question in my mind who I would call, who I wanted them to be with, and who I knew would take them. You were just always there for us. You finally had to, for our benefit, had to stop being there. I think you kind of realized that you were enabling us other ways.
When it did come down to an electric bill not being paid or it turned off, I wanted to go and pay that, but I had to draw a line and say they had the money, but they chose to use that money for an addiction.
Eventually, that did end up helping us out because that made us kind of hit a spot to where we were actually able to see we needed help. One of the worst 2 weeks that I can recall is the 2 weeks before I went to treatment. I had done some very hurtful things to people I loved. I stole from you. I mean, I lied and did whatever I could to get drugs that week. Eventually, everything ran out and I was very sick. I wanted to die. And I just remember, you know, you were just trying to help me, try to get me in somewhere as quick as possible. But at that time, we couldn't find anything.
I remember pulling up to the emergency room to wait for you and seeing a lady laying on the ground outside the waiting room. The homeless woman was you laying out on the sidewalk, and I was in shock. I tried to deter the children, but they did see their mother laying there. It just broke my heart to see you in that situation. I would have never have guessed that it would have came to that, where you've lost your dignity.
I felt lifeless. Addiction it's a horrible thing. I think families suffer just as much, if not possibly worse, than the addict, because the addict's able to numb. The family's not, you know, being worried that they're going to get the phone call, that person's dead. But there is hope, and recovery is possible. I entered treatment at Access Residential Hospital in Dayton, Ohio. It was really the beginning of my life. And I always had hope that me and Justin would get our lives back together, raise our children together. Unfortunately, the day I got out of treatment, Justin passed away. That kind of hurts. I'm not sure exactly where we stood in his heart the day he died. I know he loved me.
I know he loved you too. That would be my gift to you, to say I know he wanted to be together as a family. I just know he wanted it to be healthy. I'm very proud of you and how you present yourself in the community. It does take a strong woman, keeping your head up high, and you're doing well.
And it feels good to hear that. It feels good to hear people tell me they're proud of me. People can see the change in me. I'm just completely a different person today. And I like that person. And I want to apologize for all those things that I've done. You know, I'm terribly sorry. I wish I could go back and not do those things.
Apologies accepted, and I love you, and you know that.
I love you.
This summer, Sarah regained custody of her three youngest children. Recovery Stories is part of a special collaboration between West Virginia Public Broadcasting and Ohio public radio station WYSO. The series is produced by Jess Mador. For more, visit WYSO.org. Health reporter Kara Lofton spent the semester working with fifth graders at Valley Elementary School on a youth reporting project. In the following audio postcard, we'll hear from six of those students about how holiday traditions help them feel connected to their families and their communities.
Hi, my name is Grace, and I live in Candleton, West Virginia. My favorite tradition is baking my mom's cookies because that is what my mom ate when she was a kid. I also made a tradition where we let our dogs play with the wrapping paper after we open the gift. So when I get a dog, I can give the tradition to my kids. Those are my favorite traditions.
Hi, my name is January Hudson. I live in Killington, West Virginia, and I'm 11 years old. My favorite traditions is when my mom gives my sister and me ornaments that we open and put it on the Christmas tree, and we get pajamas to wear that night. On Christmas morning, we wake each other up and we open up our gifts. It makes me happy, especially when my mom, dad, and sister open up the presents that I give.
Hi, my name is Jaden White. I am 11 years old and I live in Kimberly, West Virginia. My favorite tradition that makes me feel connected is when we go to my aunt's house and we sing 12 Days of Christmas. We play a trivia game that if you guess the question right, then you get the Christmas present that goes with your answer.
My name is Kiana Banks. I'm 10 years old and I live in Kimberly, West Virginia. My favorite tradition is when every Christmas Eve we open one gift and get one pair of pajamas and we wear them that night. My favorite tradition is when we bake cookies and then we eat them. I love when we eat cookies because we always laugh and we have so much fun. Every year we go to my aunt's house, all of our family is there, and we sing 12 Days of Christmas and play trivia games. I love Christmas.
My name is Joseph Johnson. I am from Montgomery, West Virginia, and I'm 10 years old. I like when my family comes over for a Christmas Eve party in the morning. After we open up presents, we watch the Christmas Story.
My name is Dennis Hall. I'm from Patton, West Virginia. Well, my favorite tradition is when on Christmas Eve we would always gather around the Christmas tree and have hot cocoa. And then we would watch a Christmas movie.
You just heard from fifth graders at Valley Elementary School who participated in a youth reporting project with Appalachia Health News coordinator Kara Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, the Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Ann Zalevich. It's 7:52. In the weather forecast for West Virginia, we're expecting mostly sunny skies today and tomorrow. Highs today will be in the 40s, highs tomorrow will be in the 50s, lows tonight generally in the 20s. Rain is in the forecast once again late Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Dutch Miller Subaru in Charleston. Dutch Miller Automotive is proud to be dedicated to multiple community service initiatives and local charities. More about our team and the Subaru Love Promise at DutchMillerSubaru.com. And by Orion Strategies, professional public relations, government affairs, creative services, and research and polling with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. Nashville may be many things, but not the place you would expect to find a retro chic Hawaiian band. Jim Lang of Eclectopia has more.
When we think of gentle swaying palm trees and a mesmerizing surf, we might think Hawaii, but we would not think Nashville, Tennessee. Hula Hi-Fi is the brainchild of Josh Kaler, a Nashville record producer, who has found his retro cool in their latest album, Hawaiian Noir, Volume 1. So tell us about Hula Hi-Fi.
My day job is producing records, and I love that. I make rock records for other bands. And, you know, I've been playing steel guitar for about 12, 13 years now, and I just wanted a project that kind of just features the lap steel and sort of features the Hawaiian style of playing lap steel. And now it's kind of grown into a very, like, it's my passion project now. Like, it's a songwriting project.
So what is your connection to Hawaii?
Was very much into Jerry Bird. He was on some records, some pretty big records of Patsy Cline, Johnny Cash. I mean, he was in Nashville for years and kind of got tired of the scene and moved to Hawaii. In my opinion, became the greatest steel guitar player that ever lived, at least on the sixth string. I found Jerry, and he was making all this music just from the slide in his fingers with nothing helping him, like the pedals and such. So, you can play lap steel and have it sound like you're singing.
So let's talk about some standout tracks. Bloom, Nirvana cover.
And Nirvana, honestly, I mean, I was a grunge kid. I grew up on that stuff. Like, that's kind of why I play music. You know, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Soundgarden, like, the whole Seattle grunge movement was my thing. So it was sort of an ode to that as well. It's part of the prerequisite of a song that I'd love to cover in this band is, you know, the melody. It's just all about how that's going to translate with a female singing it, or and also on the lap steel. Nirvana melodies are just amazing. I mean, I thought he was brilliant, you know, still do.
Oh, he's the one who likes our pretty songs, and he likes to sing along, and he likes to shoot his gun, but he don't know what it means, don't know what it means when I say.
Utterly beautiful and heartfelt. Tell us about that.
The other thing that we were trying to do was trying to find songs from every decade since the 50s. Like, we wanted to have something from each decade. So I think we had a meeting what 80s bands could work in this style. Cars came up. The Cars song just kind of got out the ukulele and just started to kind of, you know, get kind of a wistful kind of feel thing going. And then Sarah just started singing the melody, and it was just like, well, that sounds like it could be something.
Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna tell you things aren't so thank you.
And Wicked Game, yep. Talk about that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that, yeah, that's Annie singing, and that, I mean, her voice is just so perfect for that song. She's just so good at, when I'm recording her in the booth, it's very much like, I don't know, it's just really, you can just tell she really gets into it, and the emotion that's in that vocal, I mean, it was a perfect choice for her, and the key, you know, the register for her, it just worked beautifully.
The world was on fire and no one could save me.
So Planet Caravan, I was listening to that and I was like, I know this tune. I thought maybe it's back in the 40s, but no, this is Black Sabbath from Paranoid. Talk about that one.
Yeah, that kind of falls under the category of deep cuts, you know, as far as like trying to find a song that is a wild card, and that to me is the ultimate wild card on the record. Yeah, it just felt like a great trippy tune to end the record with.
We say
the group is Hula Hi-Fi, and their new album is called Hawaiian Noir, Volume 1. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jim Lang.
That was Jim Lang, host of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Eclectopia, speaking with John Kaler about his album Hula Wi-Fi. You can hear Eclectopia at 10 p.m. Friday nights on West Virginia Public Broadcasting.